Scotch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Breaking, Samaritan, Funny Pages, Maneater, and Watcher. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring House of the Dragon. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The big news this week is there's more insanity going on with the Warner Brothers Discovery HBO Max kerfuffle that's going on. It's supposed to be a redirection of efforts, and they're really botching this, I think, at least from a public relations standpoint. All the changes they're making, there's so many things that have bad optics to it. Everything from canceling Batgirl, which just seems like a monster mistake to cancel it that late. And it's clear they're just doing it for the money. The problem with that is, even though there's people who'd be like, well, it's a business, they can do whatever they want to, and they're right, but it shows the lack of concern for the artists and the creators. Now, more on that in a minute, because what's happening is apparently they're having what's called funeral screenings of Batgirl, which are the rough cut is being secretly shown to people who at least worked on the film so they can see their work come to fruition. Because here's the thing, when you work on something and you don't want to see it just get destroyed. Imagine if you're a person who works with cars and they take cars off the assembly line and you're proud of what you do and then they just dump it and put it into a trash heap. I'm not talking about using those cars to do crash test dummies where the car themselves are being immediately destroyed. At least they have a purpose. But if they're just dumped into a pit, it is very demoralizing to the people working on the product, whatever that product is. In this sense, it happens to be movies. So why would anyone want to spend their time and their blood, sweat, and tears and do something creative and do something like that and then just have somebody bury it? And on top of that, the filmmakers from Batgirl apparently went in and they tried to save the footage, and allegedly Warner Brothers was in there just wiping it, just getting rid of all the footage they can. And the business reason behind that is so they could show that there's no way it could be resurrected and then taken for profit, you know, because that's how they get the tax write-off. I mean, I don't know. Some of this is all this sort of like rumor and conjecture, but that kind of makes sense. On top of this, they're wiping out tons of animation off of the HBO Max servers. They've lost like 200 episodes of Sesame Street, and a lot of these are in order to reduce the need to pay out residuals, which, again, yeah, it works on a balance sheet, but it's also thumbing their nose at the people who worked on this stuff. It'd be different if they weren't watching it. If nobody was watching it and they said, well, nobody's watching these things, so let's take it off the service, but we're taking it off just so we don't have to pay you. And that's kind of terrible. And the reason that that's going to come back to bite them is how many people who are high-level content creators or even rank-and-file people are going to want to work for a company that could potentially do that. On top of that, they're moving Shazam 2 into March. They're moving Aquaman 2 into next Christmas. All of this is allegedly to avoid the release of Avatar 2. But everything's just getting upheaved in Warner Brothers system. Now, they've also announced that they've got Dan Lin coming in as their new Kevin Feige of DC. And what's interesting, I've actually met Dan Lin. I had a really casual conversation with him one time at an event for The Two Popes. He produced that movie. And the guy's smart, and the guy's sharp, and he understands story, and he understands non-epic quality as well, you know, when you're dealing with characterization and that sort of thing. But he's up against a huge challenge here, where you've got a bunch of these properties that really can't be unwound from the current universe. You've got Wonder Woman, you've got the Shazam and Aquaman sequels. How are those going to fit into whatever this new vision of DC becomes? And remember, Marvel wasn't Marvel until 4 years after they released Iron Man and they got the Avengers. And it was only when the Avengers made $600 million in theaters that everyone's like, whoa, we want an Avengers too. And it's like, yes, then take the time to foster the talent and have a grand vision. And you may have to take 4 or 5 years to get there. You can't get it out of the gate, which is exactly the problem that they had when, after Avengers did well, they retooled Man of Steel and then built everything on the Snyderverse that ended up collapsing. The other little piece of news, it has been announced that Halloween Ends, the latest Halloween movie, will be coming to theaters and Peacock on October 14th, which is kind of a gutsy move for Universal because everybody seems to be pivoting away from the streaming services, and Universal's kind of doubling down on it. Now, they did movies like Marry Me and Firestarter, and that one flopped, but Marry Me actually did quite well as a Peacock release. So there is money to be made from this, and I think for something like a horror movie, especially a Halloween movie, where you basically got about 2 weeks to cash in on this, because no one wants to go see a Halloween movie on November 5th. I mean, I would, but nobody in the mainstream, everybody wants to see Halloween those couple weeks before Halloween. And even if people see it in theaters, people are going to want to turn on Halloween night. So it makes sense to give it a hybrid release. So these short-timed situations are key to streaming. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Pinocchio, which is coming to Disney Plus on Disney Day, which is September 8th.
Hello, Pops.
Ah! Jumping jeepers.
An almost real boy.
Turn around. Let me get a look at you. I will be right here when you get back.
Pinocchio is running around loose without a conscience. Can you imagine the trouble he's gonna get into?
Wouldn't want that on my conscience.
Everybody who's anybody wants to be a somebody.
But I want to be real.
Why on earth would you want to be real when you can be famous?
This is the latest in the line of the quote-unquote live action. And I say quote-unquote live action because there's so much digital imagery in here. It's like the Lion King was not a live action version. But it's the apparent live action remake of the classics. And this is Pinocchio. They've got Tom Hanks playing Geppetto. And in that sense, I mean, as good as a movie looks, I mean, stylistically wise, I think it's good. And then forget that people are like, oh, Pinocchio looks creepy. Pinocchio, he's a CGI version of Pinocchio. It's not creep. He's a puppet, for crying out loud. But Geppetto is played by Tom Hanks, and I have a feeling they're going to lean into his character a little bit too much because you end up with Tom Hanks. The movie's not about Geppetto. It's about Pinocchio. But it looks like it might be interesting. There are certain parts that look very much inspired by the look of the original movie, and some of them that have kind of gone crazy Tim Burton look, like, you know, Stromboli from the movie itself. He's kind of over the top. But I'm looking forward to this one. I'll check this one out. I think it's directed by Zemeckis, so that's touch or go. You know, when he sometimes gets a little bit too obsessed with the technology. But I'm curious to check it out. The other one I want to talk about is Confess Fletch, which is in theaters on VOD on September 16th.
Earl Maurice Fletcher.
Who killed this young woman?
I think the victim interrupted an art theft.
Your fingerprints are on the murder weapon, and someone matching your description was seen with the victim. Come back with me to police headquarters.
I get it. You want my help? Okay.
Hey, guys, is there a way we can call in a coffee or a kill for a macchiato? Not literally.
I looked into your criminal record.
And?
You're a bit of a shady character, Mr. Fletcher.
But I am adorable.
This is the reboot of the Fletch franchise. It's not getting a huge theatrical release, which is kind of disappointing. I mean, I remember I grew up with the Fletch movies with Chevy Chase, but I'm not tied to Chevy Chase as Fletch. I mean, there's some people that are like, he can only do it. And I know they were going to do a Fletch 1 movie back, and Kevin Smith was involved at one point. They've jettisoned all that, and they got John Hamm playing Fletch. It looks like it might be kind of clever. I'm curious to see it. I'd like to see... Maybe if they're just going to do a series of lower budget, smaller release stuff, that's really what the Fletch books were. Not everything needs to be a big blockbuster. And this one looks like it might be one of those movies that could start a franchise, only it's a smaller franchise. Next, coming up on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about the new films, Funny Pages and Manny.
Thank you.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and start talking about something that's a little bit strange. Let's start with the weirder ones. First of all, you got to realize this week of the year, regardless of pandemics, this week, I think it's like week 34, the weekend before Labor Day, always tends to be a slow week at the movies. There's smaller releases, more quirky releases. If you go back historically, you can find bigger things coming out, like the movie Ready or Not, which was a neat little movie from a couple years ago starring Samara Weaving. As much as I like that one, it wasn't a huge hit, and it came out in this weekend. You know, not every now and then there's a big movie that opens. But you're getting that this week. There's a lot of stuff that's coming out, but they're all small or specialty releases. And one of those specialty releases is Funny Pages. A teenage comic book artist steps away from school and his family to try and find his own way and enter a field of professional drawing.
You're already at a professional level of drawing for what you want to do.
Well, my heroes didn't go to college.
Do you know what you get with a GED? You know what kind of job you would get?
What?
Gas station.
I'd love to work in a gas station.
Robert, meet our friend Wallace.
So, it says here you worked for a company called Image.
Year for
like Image Comics.
What would it take for a drawing lesson? Honestly, you consider yourself a cartoonist, right? I pay you. How much?
You have to understand what this is. I know this is being billed as a comedy, and it is. It is. I mean, from a technical standpoint, but this is not a knee slapper, laugh out loud, funny movie like The Hangover. It's not a broad comedy, so to speak. It's more of a niche comedy. Back in the early 1990s. There were a whole bunch of these fiercely independent films. And some people made huge careers out of them. Richard Linklater came out with Slacker. Kevin Smith do something like Clerks. I mean, these were movies done completely outside of the Hollywood system. There's no studio involved, and it wasn't until they were picked up often by somebody like Miramax. That's the kind of quirkiness this movie is. This is not a mainstream comedy by any stretch of the imagination. But I find a real warmth in that kind of old school, what I'm going to call old school, because it's about 30 years ago, that old school indie film experience. You know, it's shot in Jersey, it takes place in Jersey, and it's in the winter, so it's not picturesque, we'll say. And this kid lives in the strangest situation you're ever going to find. I mean, lives with a wealthy family or well-to-do family, not wealthy. They live in a decent house, and his parents have a decent job, and they're getting ready to send him to college, but he's just wanting to do his stuff on his own. And as a teenager, any new experience is exciting. So we know when he drops out of school, he goes and gets a job at a comic book store, and he ends up driving a clunker car, and he's just excited to have a car, even though the car doesn't run well. And somebody says to him at one point, he says, "Hey, your car's smoking," because it's literally smoking, and he thought he was giving him a compliment. He's like, "Hey, thanks." He rents a room, and I'm not going to even say an apartment. It's the strangest, most uncomfortable room you'd ever have. It's in this guy's basement, and it's by the heater, so it's a billion degrees down there, but he's just happy to have his own place, even though it's kind of not really, because he's sharing it with some very strange characters. And it's these very cringy, kind of awkward and off-putting characters. He's very strange. Like, part of it is he gets a job at a public defender's office, and it's like going down to the public defender's office. You know, you see some real characters, and there's some real characters in this movie. It is very interesting and very funny, but you need to know what you're getting into, because it's not the broad comedy. But if you like that kind of movie, I mean, it's fiercely awkward and off kilter, and it reminds me of those lovable but dysfunctional indie films of the early 1990s. I find warmth in that. So I'm going to say it kind of rocks, but I will admit it is not for everybody.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Maneater. A group of friends go on a beach vacation only to be terrorized by a vengeful great white shark.
Thank you.
There she is.
Beautiful.
What was that?
What was that?
Okay.
sign. Dolphins are a good sign.
Really?
Oh my God!
I'm always up for a good shark movie, and for some reason, August tends to be a good time. I remember a couple years ago, the movie The Shallows came out with Blake Lively as a surfer who gets caught in this kind of lagoon with a great white shark. That was a great movie. That, you know, that's perfect for sort of summer viewing. The movie 47 Meters Down was good. I'm going to say Maneater's a little bit more Sharknado or Sharktopus than it is something like The Shallows. It's definitely low budget. And it's very strange. I mean, it has all the elements of a shark movie, and the shark attacks people, and the shark does eat people. But rather than this being a remake of Jaws, and when it comes to Jaws, you know, it's so hard to do a shark movie without even treading accidentally on lines or ideas from Jaws, because Jaws is such that perfect film. This movie at times swerves so dangerously close to pulling a line, and they think they're being clever. Like, at one point, a character's like, oh, that's a shark, and there's my boat. We're going to need a bigger one of those. I mean, you're just like, really, seriously? You really workshopped that line so you didn't, like, directly quote Jaws. And there's a whole bunch of those. Now, this also stars an interesting cast, because it's got Nikki Whalen, who is a gorgeous Australian actress, and she's been in movies for about 15, 20 years. I mean, she's like in her early 40s, but man, she still looked fantastic in a bikini, I'll tell you that. But she's not exactly like a huge movie star. And they have a very strange approach to the age in there, because they say, oh, she just got out of pre-med. And I'm like, well, when did she join pre-med? When she was like in her 30s, late 30s? And like Shane West is one of the actors in it. And again, he's about her age too. I mean, they play what would be college students, but they're people who are clearly going to need to start taking ibuprofen in the morning because their arthritis gets bad. And then there's also this weird background story with Trace Adkins, who strangely, his hair changes length, because at one point he has long hair, and then another point he has it cut. And they don't even put a wig on him. They don't put extensions on. They just figure no one will notice his hair's gone. It must have been during reshoots. So there's some really weird low-budget stuff going on with this. He's supposed to be the Quint character, but really this movie is less of a remake of Jaws and more of a remake of Jaws 4, because the shark apparently has a grudge against people. And Trace Adkins plays not the Quint Robert Shaw character, but the Michael Caine character from Jaws 4. And they want to make a franchise out of this, I think. They want to have him going around the world killing sharks that are taking revenge on people. So it is bizarre. And the people are extremely dumb, even for horror movie standards. But it's fun. It's something you could watch kind of like a Mystery Science Theater level with friends in your house. I mean, it's low rent. It's still a passable shark movie, but it's filled with riffable moments and nonsensical silliness. I'm going to say Maneater kind of rocks as long as you're watching it in the right context with the right amount of adult beverages.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about the new films Breaking and Samaritan. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Breaking. John Boyega stars in this true story about a Marine vet who holds tellers at a bank hostage in order to get paid by the VA.
The guy in the gray hoodie is robbing the bank.
Got the FBI, the GBI.
This is Sergeant Bernard. Is everyone all right in there?
As long as everybody stays calm, nobody gets hurt. I have a bomb, and I'm gonna kill myself and everybody in here. My demands, and I'm there.
Fraud was committed.
The VA stole my disability check from me.
I've had some problems with veteran affairs myself. How about you release one of those ladies?
No. I need everybody to see what's happening here.
Like I said, based on a true story, this took place in 2017 in Marietta, Georgia. And it was about this Marine vet who he struggled after coming home from the service, as a lot of service members do. You know, it's a huge transition. And there's a movie that came out about 20 years ago called Three Kings. It starred George Clooney and Ice Cube. And that was an interesting look at the challenges of coming home from a wartime situation and how everyday life in a wartime situation or even just in military is very different than just trying to hold down a regular job somewhere. And there's a real reason why people can struggle with that. Well, he was on disability and his disability check ended up not getting paid and there were like loans and it basically it got frozen and he lost a paycheck. Well, you know, most people in America at least have some inkling on what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck. It's catastrophic if you lose a paycheck. Even if the grand scheme of things, it's not that expensive. For example, in this movie, he takes his bank hostage. He just wants his $892. It's not even 900 bucks. He just wants the money that he feels is due to him that was not delivered to him for bureaucratic reasons. And so this puts you on his side. And one of the things that's really interesting, everything that I've read about the real story, and they show it in this, is he was very polite. You know, he was a sir and ma'am and thank you and please, and he apologized to people in there. He was not violent. Even to the point that he would answer the phones and take messages because people didn't know the bank was being held up right at the beginning. This is not like a heist movie. Like last week I talked about Heat. This is not a movie like Heat. This is a movie about just a regular guy trying to get what's owed to him and taking a desperate move. And I mean, what he did is wrong. But when you look at the framing of this as a movie, you're like, I can understand where somebody with their back against the wall could feel like that's their only option. And one of the things with John Boyega is he is best known for doing the Star Wars movies. Obviously, he played Finn in the Disney sequel trilogy. And he's kind of high profile pulled back from that. There's the news this week where he's like, he's not going to return to Star Wars. Nah, which is what everybody said. I mean, Carrie Fisher said that in the 80s and she ended up returning. But, you know, for right now, John Boyega is doing his own thing. He wants to do more serious acting and like character pieces. And this is one of them. And it really gives him a chance to act. And he does a good job acting. But, you know, this is not an action movie. Like I said, it's a character study and it's a look at a real person with real problems. And that's where the strength is. They have the outside and the response, and it shows where, you know, sort of these multiple agencies trying to work together. You're going to have SWAT, you're going to have FBI, you're going to have a lot of people coming together. And it shows where, let's just say, they may not all be on the same page. And they may not all be working with the same goal. And where there's conflicting issues. And depending on the departments involved, it could be well-managed or not. And I think this does a good job showing it without vilifying other people in this movie. The same thing he's dealing with the press. He calls a TV station because he wants to get the message out. He wants people to see what's going on. It doesn't show the press necessarily in a great light, but it also doesn't vilify them. It doesn't make them these blood-sucking leeches. It's everybody from their own angle doing their job. And so that's, I think, an interesting way of presenting the movie. Now, it's not perfect. It does run a bit long. But, you know, overall, I think it's an important film. And it's well acted, but overwrought at times. And this shines a light on a real problem that hits some Americans. So I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next film, which is Samaritan. Sylvester Stallone stars as a mysterious neighbor that an inner city kid believes is a missing superhero.
I found him. Samaritan.
Samaritan died 25 years ago.
That's what they say.
You think you live across from a superhero? Do you have a therapist, kid?
Kid. Samaritan is dead. I pick up garbage for a living, pal.
Samaritan cleaned up the streets.
You mind your business, I'll mind mine.
First of all, this is available on Prime. The other stuff is available in theaters. This was exclusively on Prime. I think it was going to go to theaters at one point. But, you know, it's just at home. It's trying to cash in on superhero elements. And you know, people sit there and bemoan superhero movies. I mean, I think we're due for a story where Martin Scorsese slags on Marvel and superhero movies. Let's get to that, you know, this film Twitter. But as much as everybody bemoans superhero movies have literally been a thing since the entirety of cinema times. And I mean, ever since they made Superman in 1978, there have been a series of superhero movies. You had Batman in 1989 sort of recharging it. And then, of course, the X-Men movies in 2000. And then you had Marvel in 2008. So we've always had superhero movies, and everybody's tried to give their own angle. And there are times when they try to do a more realistic, gritty version of it. They tried that with Kick-Ass. That was an interesting and fun movie. I don't think they achieved the gritty realism with that. But they've done these kind of movies before, and this one overdoes the grit. I mean, it takes place I think it's called Granite City, and it's a stupid name to the point that there's a scene where a garbage truck shows up and it says City of Granite City. And I'm like, that's indicative of the writing of the entire screenplay. Not very well thought out. They could have written that better, even if it's just a decal on the side of a truck. But anyways, this Granite City, it's supposed to be Detroit. I think it's supposed to be. But it's Detroit where sun never shines. And I've been to Detroit. The sun shines on Detroit. Detroit actually has some very nice days. I mean, the city itself has some issues. But Detroit can actually have some very nice weather at the right time. But this thing, it's all gray. It's all dingy. There's not a fleck of sunlight in the sky. It's all overcast, so it kind of feels like it is existing in this Snyderverse, but like a low-rent Snyderverse. And it's in the inner city, so it's very depressed, and it's sort of like The Crow, which took place in Detroit, if you remember the look of that movie. And so this kid is trying to basically out Sylvester Stallone as this old superhero, and he just wants to be left alone, but of course he does have these superpowers, and so there's this connection there, and it's supposed to be this connection between the old guy and the kid, but of course I think they did a better job with Stallone and the kid and Over the Top, as annoying as that kid is in that movie. This kind of misses all those marks. It aims for him, but it misses him. I still don't understand exactly what the bad guy's trying to do in this movie. I guess they're just sowing chaos. Again, very similar to The Crow, where, at least in The Crow, they're just there to create chaos and then profit from it. But this one, I don't even know what they're trying to do. It's really weirdly unclear. And there's these, like, turns and twists in the plot that you can see coming. I mean, quite literally, from, like, the opening of the movie, I knew how it was going to end. This movie just misses the mark. It's drab and depressing, and it attempts to cash in on the superhero pop culture, but it can't find a decent spark. So I'm going to have to say that Samaritan sucks.
It sucks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about the film Watcher and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring House of the Dragon. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with some movie reviews and talk about Watcher. This is actually available on Shudder right now. I think it actually had a limited run in theaters a couple months ago, but it's from IFC. And IFC, this is what's so funny. Let me just talk about this for a second. For as much hubbub, if everybody's complaining about stuff like Halloween going to theaters and streaming, and they're like, oh my God, it's going to destroy theaters and everything, you do realize that hybrid releases of VOD in some shape or form and theatrical release is the norm for some movies. Most every movie that is released by IFC, which is one of the biggest outlets of smaller independent films. They're never huge movies, but they make some money and they kind of exist under the radar of most people who are watching for the next Thor or Guardians of the Galaxy movie. But these IFC movies get releases in theaters all the time on the same day they hit VOD. And this has been going on for more than a decade. This is nothing new. This has been going on since VOD was an option. And it frustrates me that people are like, no, only the big movies are the ones that I'm going to hold this standard to. And that's why I said, if you look at the release model of IFC, those companies do these hybrid releases all the time because they know sometimes they don't get to the penetration into the marketplace to all the theaters. And I mean, if you live near water or you live near a large city, yes, you can usually find these things in the theaters, but these IFC releases and Magnolia releases, a lot of times your only option is to see them online or you got to drive a couple hours. Why not allow that model to be applied to horror movies or kids movies or something like that? I think there's a real elitism going on in terms of the release structure of what people think a large studio release needs to be. But Watcher came out earlier this year and it was in theaters and on VOD, and now it's hitting Shudder, which gives people a chance that if they already have the Shudder streaming service, they don't have to pay a premium and it's kind of included in there. And I think that that's great. I'm always a fan of more accessibility and wider range of movies. I think that works for the artist and the people who put it together, and I think it works for the consumers who have a chance to see the movies. Anyways, in Watcher, Micah Monroe stars as a woman who moves to Romania with her husband, but finds herself culturally isolated and fears a mysterious man across the courtyard is stalking her.
There's this guy that lives across the street, and he's always looking over here.
Looking over here how?
Every time I look over there, he's just staring right at me.
Do you feel like coming in for a drink?
Yeah. Have you noticed anyone watching you in your apartment?
No.
This guy has been watching us since we moved in.
Maybe he's staring at the woman who's staring at him.
I know that Micah Monroe is the latest queen of the indies. 30 years ago, it was Parker Posey. Micah Monroe's been in a bunch of these smaller indie films, particular horror movies, stuff like It Follows. She was in that. Now, she's done major motion pictures. She was in the sequel to Independence Day, Independence Day Resurgence. She played the president's daughter, obviously recast. She was also in it was like The Fifth Wave or something like that. She's never good in the big movies. She's best in the parts of the smaller movies, you know, stuff like, she was in The Guest, that's another one with Dan Stevens. And I'm not a big fan of Micah Monroe. Yeah, I mean, she's pretty. She's an attractive blonde girl. That's not hard to find in Hollywood. I don't think she's that good of an actor, but a lot of people do. I think she does a decent job acting in this one, but even then, her go-to acting performance is generally very understated. And I just find her kind of flat and boring as an actor, but I think she holds her own in this one. The movie itself, it's obviously playing a little bit off of Rear Window because she's in this apartment complex and either across a courtyard or across the parking lot, there's another window. And it reminds people of Rear Window. It's obviously, it doesn't all take place in the room like Rear Window does. But it's, or something like Somebody to Watch Over Me, which was a TV movie that John Carpenter did. But she does a fine job playing this isolated woman. The reason this woman's isolated is her husband's Romanian and she's moving with him back to Romania. So she doesn't speak the language very well. She doesn't quite understand the culture. And that can be very isolating to somebody. And so it deals with that paranoia and the isolation, and you don't know whether she is overreacting or not. And I think that's a nice dichotomy that does show up in this movie. Bern Gorman plays the guy across the way, and I love him. I think he's fantastic. He's very creepy in this, and you just don't know if he's just generally creepy or if he's actually evil. So it has its moments and it has its delivery, and it certainly does work. Most of it's on Micah Monroe's shoulder, and I think she actually steps up to the acting plate on this one. So I'm going to say that The Watcher, you know, it's a slow burn with some decent suspense. So kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today I'm going to be talking about House of the Dragon. I know it premiered on Sunday. It's been a while. We're actually getting ready to have the next episode this week. This is the one high point of HBO Max right now, where Warner Brothers is like, oh, we got all these other crabs and the entire world's burning down here. Here's a Game of Thrones prequel. Taking place almost 200 years before Game of Thrones, this epic saga follows a royal family with the internal battles for control of the land.
I consider the matter urgent. That of your succession.
Well, who else would have a claim?
The firstborn child.
Rhaenyra. No queen has ever sat the Iron Throne.
The king has an heir. Daemon Targaryen.
I will not be made to choose between my brother and my daughter.
Rhaenyra's succession will be challenged. Knives will come out.
War is afoot.
This was kind of an experiment for me, because I have a confession to make. I've never seen an episode of Game of Thrones. A lot of times I'll say, I've not seen a single frame of it. And that's not true. I've seen frames of Game of Thrones. I've done my Google searches on the nudity. I know. That's what I do. So I have seen frames of Game of Thrones. And you can't escape stuff like, what is it, the Shame Nun? You see those GIFs floating around the internet. Joffrey meets. So, I mean, I'm weirdly familiar with Game of Thrones, even though I've never watched it. But I've never sat down and watched the series. And I kind of wanted to. At first, I was like, why even bother? Because I know what happens at the Red Wedding. Why do I want to set myself up for disappointment like that? And I've heard that it doesn't end as well as it could have. That it kind of gets rushed and sloppy. But this is HBO desperately wanting to continue the popularity and profitability of Game of Thrones. And so they've got this new series, House of the Dragon, which I don't know the whole background with George R. R. Martin stuff, but apparently this is all part of his writing. And I thought this would be an interesting experiment. Since I've never watched Game of Thrones, would this even make sense to me? Let me watch it completely cold. So I watched it. And I just saw the first episode. I'll watch the next. I'll keep it in a couple more episodes. But it was interesting to go in knowing nothing about Game of Thrones, aside from what you kind of glean from just osmosis from society. And I will say I was able to follow it. It didn't have the impact it could have, because I don't know the significance of the family history, of what happens in Game of Thrones. I don't understand the significance of the dragons. I don't understand the significance of the Targaryens, which sound like a Doctor Who race of aliens, but nope, apparently they run the land. So it was okay. I don't understand where all the money went. There's a couple cool dragon shots, but you know, as much as you say it's one of the highest per episode series, I don't know where the money went. I mean, like something like Stranger Things, I knew it went to cast. I mean, it would look good, but it didn't look like a multi-million dollar movie. It didn't look like a $100 million blockbuster. But, you know, maybe bigger things are going to happen in later episodes, and that's just an average. It's a good start. It's nice to see Matt Smith getting some stuff. I like what he's doing with his character. It's interesting to see Patty Constantine not as a regular schlub in the world, but as a schlub in a medieval fantasy type thing. It looks like it's a good start, but it's everything I've heard about Game of Thrones, where it is slow and it's all about dialogue and background. So I'm going to say it's a good start. You know, it's lavish and it's impressive, but it's definitely relying on the love of the original series to catch an audience's full attention. I'll say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
And that's it for this week. I'm going to have to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about the films Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul, and the new series on Amazon, The Rings of Power. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.